Hello, 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 and good evening. How are we all doing? Hope that everybody is well and that you have had a good week since I last saw you. I know there has been lots going on for all of us, lots of reflections, lots of excitement, which of course is just is well, it's just quite frankly amazing. So it is so good to be back with you for part two of our training together. I have come on just a few minutes live, mostly just because I was really excited because I could see everybody joining and I wanted to come on and say hi. But also just to check that we are all good in terms of the tech, in terms of all of those types of things. So just give me one second because I am getting a bit of feedback, which I'm just going to sort out quickly. So just give me one second. I can hear on that when I've got my volume on. So we just need to turn the sound on that off. So when I put my volume on here, I can hear that. Well, then they won't be able to hear me.
No, they'll be able to hear you.
Will they?
They'll just mute your audio on.
So if I do that, people can still hear me, okay?
I'll let you know in a
Yeah?
second, but yeah,
Okay,
that should
cool.
help you.
So we think we have it sorted. We think we're all good. I've just got my tech support team out in the office. I'm sat in the meeting room at My Happy Mind HQ, and we think we're good. So they're just checking for me because I was getting a bit of feedback, which we don't want. I definitely don't want to hear myself speaking just after I've spoken. That's really, really disconcerting. So hopefully it is all sorted. I will just wait for them to give me the thumbs up. But how's everyone doing? How is everybody feeling? How is everybody doing this Tuesday night? It's very dark outside and very wet and dreary where I am, which is no fun. So hopefully it's nicer where you guys are. But hopefully all good now with the sound. Hey Meryl, joining us from Belfast. Hey, from Sydney, Australia. Oh my goodness, it is early in Sydney. I absolutely love Sydney. So nice to see you popping up there. Hey from Texas. Hi from London. Hope everybody is good. Audio is all fine. Phew, now I can relax. I can relax and dive into the training. So welcome, welcome, welcome to part two of Happiness Hacks Live. I know that many of you that are here tonight will have been with me live last week for part one, which is super cool, and I am really excited to be taking you into phase two. I also know that there's lots of you that have watched phase one on the replay, which is super cool, and are joining us live for the first time, and that there'll be some of you watching this on the replay. So hello if you're on the replay. It's fabulous to have you with us in whichever format that is, because the reason I've spaced this training out in the way that I have over these kind of three parts or three phases is to allow you guys to catch up. We have people from all over the world with us, which is really cool, but not every time zone is going to work for every person. So that's why we've done it in that way. So there's space in between the sessions to catch up. So let's get going, shall we? Let's dive in to phase two. And kick off just by saying a big welcome back. It's so lovely to have you all with us. Now, my team are in the chat. You will see them posting in the chat, welcoming you and answering questions as well as we go. There will be a big Q&A at the end of this session. For those of you that were with me live last time or watched the replay, you'll know that I said, oh my goodness, there's so many great questions. I'm going to save them for tonight because so many of them I knew would get answered through the content that I'm going to be sharing with you. So what we're going to do is recap on those questions that were asked last time, and then we'll go into any other questions that might have come up through this session as well. Now, as with last time, you will see my eyes, I should say, darting to the side occasionally. That's just me checking in on the chat. So I have another screen next to me, which is all of your messages. I won't do that the whole time because it will distract me and I won't deliver as good a training session as I want to, but I will check in on the chat as we go through. So if you see me looking that way, It's not because I've lost interest. It's just because I'm looking at your messages. So where are we on our journey so far? Well, right now we are in phase two. So phase one was last week, phase two is tonight, and then phase three is on Thursday of this week. So if you're watching this on the replay, you may be watching this the following day. We go live again Thursday, same time, same place. So we've had some wonderful, wonderful aha moments shared from phase one. So much goodness shared from you guys in the Facebook group. Lots of you have shared on Instagram and Facebook, and lots of you have emailed in as well, which has been fantastic to see. If you haven't already captured your biggest aha moment from phase one, I really encourage you to do so and take a photo and share it with us. I know that for many that process was quite tricky of kind of sharing how they really felt, but actually really, really powerful to kind of face up to the reality and face where they are. So if there's anybody who's with me live right now who's feeling brave and wants to just quickly share what their biggest aha moment was, I would love to hear it, just so we get a flavour of where you guys were for those that aren't in the Facebook group and might not have seen all of that content. Now, whilst you guys start to do that, I am just gonna remind you of the really exciting competition giveaway that we have going on throughout this series. So we've had a few questions in today saying, is it too late to enter? The answer to that is absolutely not. You can still enter until right at the end of phase three. So we are giving away some pretty amazing prizes, including a brand new iPad. I want to win the iPad. I don't think I can enter. I don't think that would be allowed, would it? Including free access to my signature program, My Happy Mind for Families, which is my most popular program where I take families on a real journey to help them build their resilience and their children's resilience and self-esteem and massively improve their overall family's mental health. And we have loads of swag. So we have some of our Money Can't Buy My Happy Mind travel mugs, notebooks, signed copies of my book, which is a bestseller that was released last year, and some other little surprises up our sleeve as well. And to be in with a chance of winning one of those, all you need to do is share your aha moments with us, either in the Facebook group or via email. You can email us hello@myhappymind.org. If you don't want others to see it, that's totally fine. Or you can post it on Instagram as well. So whichever is going to work best for you. So I'm just going to have a little look at what some of these aha moments are, because I can see they're coming through. So I just saw one, it's flipped down, but comparisonitis. I'm not a failure. I'm not the only one comparing my kids with others. It's okay not to be okay. I love that. Comparisonitis causes overwhelm and I'm no longer being a slave to it. Oh, that's a goodie. Love these. Love these, love these, love these. And I know that one of the things that really came through for all of you was this idea of like, we're not on our own. Actually, it's not just me. And I think that's really beautiful, because what this experience is showing you all and kind of teaching you all is that you're definitely not alone. But for whatever reason, as mums, we're not always great at sharing how we really feel. But actually, when we do that and when we face those emotions, it really helps us to move forward, which is why I wanted to spend that first session with you guys doing exactly that. So in the session last time, the other thing that we talked about was the fact that the only way to build your child's resilience and self-esteem and happiness is to use science-backed approaches. Copying what other people do just doesn't work. Listening to hearsay just doesn't work. Being a darling dabbler or a book smart believer, it just doesn't work. You've got to be consistent and you've got to be using science-backed techniques to get those sustainable results. And so today, that's what we're going to start talking about. We're going to start talking about why this science and why learning this science is the key, that if you've been struggling with your children, if you've not been sure how to help them, it's the key that you've probably been missing to this point. So I'm super excited, because this is where we get to draw a line in the sand, right? It's where we get to say, yes, it's been tough. Yes, it's been hard. Yes, I felt overwhelmed. But it gets to be different now. It gets to be clearer now. There's hope. The future gets to be different. And that's a pretty exciting place to be. So whilst I am so pleased that you've all had that time and space to reflect, now we get to move forward. And we don't forget about those feelings because they'll be helpful to come back to and to keep refreshing ourselves on. But we do get to start moving forward and take some positive steps. So let me ask you in a quick poll, because we loved the polls last time. Are you ready? Do you guys feel ready to start moving away from those limiting beliefs, from those old stories that we put in the bin, and start learning about the science that actually works? Let me know in the chat, let me know in the poll. Do you guys feel ready? I'm just going to take a sip of water whilst the live stream catches up. I think I'm like 10 seconds behind you, so, or ahead of you, I should say. Yes, we're ready. That's what we like to hear. Well, I'm ready to start teaching you, so let's dive in. So why is understanding the science and consistently applying it so important? Well, the truth is, I could spend all evening telling you about all of the research and all of the studies that, and all of the evidence base that exists around why we should be pursuing certain habits, around why we should be focusing on certain parts of science when we're trying to build our children's resilient self-esteem, when we're trying to encourage good mental health. But I'd be here all night because there's just so much research. So you're just going to have to trust me that the research and the science that I'm going to start sharing tonight is the real deal. It's the exact same research and science that we use in all of our programs in schools, nurseries and homes. Our schools program and our nurseries program is backed by the NHS. So for those of you not in the UK, that's our National Health Service. So the UK government pay for our program in schools because it has such an impact. So the first reason why it's so important to learn this is it just works, right? It's the only way you're actually going to get the right results. But in addition to that, if we've been following bad advice or hearsay, or we've been dabbling, right? We've been trying one thing, then the next thing, then the truth is we just won't have been getting very far, and it will have felt really, really hard. You know, it's hard to find the energy to try something new as a parent, whether it's a reward chart or the naughty step or whatever it might be. When we try these new approaches that we think are going to work, there's a lot of energy that goes into that. There's a lot of hope invested in it. And when it doesn't work, it's really devastating and it's really exhausting. So the other big reason that we called this Happiness Hacks Live is that some of these science-based strategies, some of these hacks, are just going to make your life so much easier. And because you haven't necessarily known them to this point, it's a bit like you've been pushing a bike up a wet, muddy hill, holding on to the brakes without even realizing you've been doing it. It's just been that much harder than it needs to be. And so the other reason, other than the fact that this stuff just works, to get into this and to start learning this is that it will make your life so much easier, so that you have less stress, so that you feel less overwhelmed, and so that you can more quickly start to see real shifts with your children. And some of you might be thinking, oh, but you know, Laura, that all sounds great, but you know, my child's never going to engage with new strategies because I've put so many strategies in front of them that haven't worked that they're just never going to listen to me. Or you might be thinking, I'm just too tired to try something else. I've tried it all. I just don't know if I've got the energy to try anything else. Or maybe you're feeling like your partner or those around you that help you to parent won't take it on board, right? They'll be cynical, or they won't adopt new approaches, or they have a very different view to you in terms of how you should be dealing with this and how you should be moving forward. Maybe you're just still feeling a little bit over it. And if you're having those thoughts, that's okay. And actually, that's really, really normal, because what our brains do, and we're going to be talking a lot about our brains tonight, what our brains do when we're looking at a change, looking at doing something different, is they pull us back into our comfort zone. Why do they do that? They do that because our brains are wired to keep us safe. Our brain, as we'll come on to shortly, is constantly thinking, is this safe or is this dangerous? And if it thinks something is dangerous, which it often will with change or something new, it will pull you back into your comfort zone and it will stop you from moving forward. So if this is helpful for you, what I would love for you to do in your workbooks, go to page 11, or if you've just got a scrap of paper, write it down and just write down, to bring your consciousness to them, any of the thoughts that you might be having right now about starting to implement the science that I'm going to teach you tonight, about starting to use a different approach. And whilst you're doing that, as you're reflecting on that, I'd love you to share with me what some of those thoughts might be. Are they the ones that I just shared, or do you have different thoughts about how you're feeling about starting to try the new approaches and try the new science that I'm going to be sharing with you tonight? So let me know in the chat. Michelle says she feels like no one seems to understand how my son works or how I try to help him. How else are people feeling? What are some of the thoughts that you're having? Just realised that we weren't sharing the slides, which someone's just pinged me about, which is helpful. But so far you've not missed anything, so it's good. The juicy ones are coming. I think my biggest barrier is my husband. I'm feeling worried. Whether a child is too old to try something new, the answer is never. Daunted. Every time I try something new, my brain says, I'm not good enough. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That is your brain keeping you safe, right? Keeping you in your comfort zone. Can I be consistent in taking the approach that I take? Excited. Sad my husband isn't on board. Excited. Feeling positive and ready to take action. Hopeful. A real mix, right? And what I want you guys just to recognize for a second is that they are just thoughts. They're not facts. And we don't always have to believe the things that we think. The things that we think are not necessarily facts. They're just things that we think. And so when you're having those thoughts, when you're having those kind of objections come up in your own mind about whether you can do this, what's a really important and powerful skill is to write them down like we've been doing, to capture them, to enable you to move forward. And I need you to know that I have been there too. You know, I told you guys my story last time. I was in a place where I felt so many of the words that you guys have shared tonight: desperate, lonely, scared, fearful. And so many of the families that I've coached in our My Happy Mind for Families program have felt the same thing too. In fact, I recently asked in our My Happy Mind for Families Facebook community, which is a group that all of our families join when they join the program, I asked them a series of questions because I wanted to show you guys that you're not alone. I said to them, how did you feel before you joined My Happy Mind? And here's what three of our lovely members said. I felt really lost. We tried numerous groups and signed up to any available webinar we could get access to so we could reach out for support and seek advice, but we didn't seem to move forward. We were trying our best as parents, but we really struggled to understand our son and his needs, and we didn't feel like we had a quality of life as a family. Another said, loved the idea of it, but I was apprehensive of spending money on a virtual course. Concerned my husband wouldn't buy into it, make coaching calls, and if I could commit. And then the third person said, I'd been searching for programs for a while. I attended lots of free classes, and I mean loads, but none of them, although some useful, came close to what we offer. However, when it came to actually clicking on that purchase button, I was still incredibly scared about spending the money and slightly skeptical about if it would really have an impact on our family, and wondering if I was just falling victim to FOMO. That's how they felt before they took the plunge to work with me inside our families program, much like many of you are feeling now. And then I said, how do you feel about your decision to invest now? And they said, best decision ever. Best decision we've made as a family. Definitely 100% worth its weight in gold. And then I said, how do you feel as a parent now you've learned all that we've taught you? I won't read all of these because you guys can read them for yourselves, but my favourite one is this: empowered, more confident, using tools to help us as a family, generally braver and thankful to have a support network. But all of these parents felt the same way that you did at some stage. But they came through it because they invested in the science, which is what we're going to dive into now. So let me show you how. But before we do that, I just want to check with you guys, like, are you ready? Because I've got some really good content for you that's coming for the rest of tonight's session and next week as well. And I just want you to know that I've got you. And all you guys need to do is give this a go, right? Be ready to try something new. Be ready to go out of your comfort zone and try something that you might not have tried before and embrace this learning. So as I take you through the next couple of areas of science that are going to be really interesting for you to learn about, I want you to try as much as possible to keep an open mind, okay? Try as much as possible to put, you know, all of your preconceived ideas to one side and just go with it, and then we'll see how it lands. So there's two key things I'm going to talk about tonight in terms of the science. And the two things I've picked are the two things that I know parents often have the biggest light bulb or aha moments around. And they both relate to how our brains work, right? And how having an understanding of the science of how our brains work is so transformative, not only in terms of understanding ourselves, but also in terms of understanding our kids. And the first kind of model that I want to introduce you to is the model that you can see on your screen now, which is the thoughts, feeling, behavior model. Some of you might have heard about this before. But essentially what this model shows is that our thoughts, the things that happen up here that originate up in our brain, are directly responsible for our feelings. So the things that we think are directly responsible for the feelings that we feel. And the feelings that we feel are directly responsible for the actions or the behaviours that we take. So our thoughts govern our feelings, and our feelings govern our behaviour. And then that behaviour reinforces those thoughts. So you can see how this just becomes a cycle, right? And we've had a great example of this through phase one, whereby when we started to explore some of your thoughts around parenting, for those of you for whom those thoughts were challenging and negative and were grounded around, you know, feeling like you were on your own, feeling like you couldn't do it, all of those feelings were coming from thoughts that you were having. And as a result of those thoughts and those feelings, you were taking certain action, or in many cases, not taking action because of the overwhelm and the comparisonitis. So you guys can see how this can play through, how those thoughts that you were having impacted those feelings, and how those feelings then were impacting your behavior. And likewise, right, now you guys have got a new perspective on that, this same thing will play out because you're feeling more positive, you're feeling more hopeful. So you're thinking things like, maybe I can do this. Maybe it can be different. Maybe I can support my child in a different way. Maybe the science will work. And that's gonna lead you to feel hopeful, excited, right? Lots of you have used that word tonight. And then guess what's gonna happen? You're going to behave or act in such a way that reflects those feelings. You're more likely to take action. You're more likely to try new things because you're being spurred on by those positive emotions. So this model always begins with our thoughts, but it always then follows with our feelings and our behaviours. So if your thoughts are negative, you're going to feel negative and you're going to act negative. But if your thoughts are positive, you're going to feel positive and you're going to act positive. So what I would love for you to do now, as that settles in, is head to your workbook, page 12, or piece of paper if you've not got your workbook, and just note down, both for yourself, first of all, but then for your child, some examples of when this model has played out. So for yourself, when have you been in a situation where you've had really positive thoughts about something, which has led to positive feelings and then positive actions? And for your child as well, when have they had really positive thoughts about something that has led to positive feelings and positive actions or behaviours? Let me know in the chat so we can bring some of this to life with some real examples for you. So feel free to write down if that's helpful for you, or just to type into the chat if not. Claire uses this model in her work with her students. It's very powerful. Yeah, lots of you have heard of it before, which is fantastic. And you know, the thing about a lot of these models is, you know, for many of you, this will be new. For some of you, you'll have heard it before, but these things are so powerful to be constantly reminded of, because there's a difference between knowing and really implementing. There's a difference between knowing about this model and really bringing it to life for you. And that only comes through practice and consistency and from being in a community that's going to keep reminding you of it. So let's hear some examples from you guys of some positive situations where either you or your child has been thinking positively about something and then has felt positive, and then as a result has been able to take positive action. Let's see what you come up with. Because this is a really interesting question, because people often find it harder to find the positive examples than they do the less positive examples, which we will come to. Sue says, our daughter was really feeling very positive about high school open day. We went last week and she can't wait to go. She had a great time and she loved everything she saw. Perfect example. Perfect example. Letting my 15-month-old walk to the end of the road to the park, and now standing back whilst he plays in the park and seeing him exploring and not saying no or being careful. Amazing. My child positively believes she could swim her distance and got her 10-metre badge because of it. Love it. I've been challenging my own thoughts and helping my child to challenge his lately, and it's already made a difference. Yes. Calmer, happier environment for everyone. My children are more likely to listen to what they're being asked what to do. Yeah, 100%. My son entered a school talent contest. He rehearsed every day and then went on to win. Oh, yes. Tell us what his talent was. Love it. My son had a chess person come into school and he was able to answer some chess questions, which made him feel good. Then he joined the class and he's doing really well at it. He's been kicked out of lots of other classes. Yeah. So you can see how if we go into a situation thinking positively about it, we will feel positive and then we will behave positively, right? It makes sense. But guess what? The reverse applies too. And if we go into a situation with more negative thoughts about it, we will feel negative about it and we will behave in such a way that reflects those feelings, and we will behave in a negative way. And one of the examples that I love to use with parents on this, that's a really good one to get your head around for kids, is a child who really is petrified of swimming. So you're driving to the swimming lesson and the child is thinking, I don't want to go in the water. I hate swimming. This is going to be horrendous. What if I go under the water? What if the swimming teacher doesn't see me? What if I can't reach the side? What if I can't touch the bottom? What if I get water in my mouth, right? They're thinking all of these things. And those thoughts lead them to some really negative feelings, feelings of being scared, feelings of being worried. And then they act or they behave in such a way that reflects those feelings. Maybe they cry, maybe they refuse to go in the water, maybe they make a big scene in the changing rooms just before their lesson begins. And one of the biggest mistakes that I see parents making, which we're going to come on to in a minute, is how they respond in that situation. Because what parents tend to do is respond to the behaviour, right? They respond to the thing that's in front of them, the negative behaviour. But actually, only responding to the behaviour in that situation, only responding to the child that's crying or kicking off about getting in the pool, is a little bit like putting an old plaster on a leaky bucket, right? It's just going to come off with time because you're not actually addressing the feelings or the thoughts. And so the next time swimming comes round, the same thing's going to happen again. And we're going to get onto this in terms of how we can do things differently in a little while this evening. But one of the biggest mistakes I see parents making, and it's no one's fault, right? If we don't know this stuff, we do what we're going to do, is just responding to that behaviour and not exploring what sits behind it. So let me know in the chat. Do you tend to, when your child is having a big emotional reaction, right, when they're expressing their emotions negatively, whether that's through tears or anger or whatever it might be for your child, withdrawal sometimes too, do you tend to try and react by dealing with the behaviour or the feelings or the thoughts? Just let me know in the chat. Behaviour, feelings or thoughts? And be honest about this, right? We're all here to learn. There's no shame in where we are right now, because what I'm teaching you is where we're going to get to. So it's all good. But what do you tend to do? Behaviour, feelings or thoughts when you're seeing that big emotional reaction from your child? Let me know. Let me know in the chat. Behaviour. Yep. Behaviour. Behaviour. Behaviour and feelings. Feelings, behaviour. So you can see, right, most of us, until we know this stuff, respond to the behaviour. And of course we do, because it's what we're faced with, right? It's what's right in front of you. And we do this as adults as well. You know, if you have a partner or a husband or a wife at home or even a friend, right? If they come in and they've had a really bad day and they're a bit grumpy with you or a bit cranky with you, we tend to bite back, right? If they come in and say, I can't believe you've not taken the bins out. It's Wednesday. I'm going to have to do it now and it's raining, right? You're not going to be thinking to yourself, oh, I wonder how they're feeling and how they're thinking. You're going to be responding to that behaviour and being like, okay, how was your day? I've had a hard day too. And you're going to kind of get into this communication exchange that is based on you reacting to their behaviour. That is what most of us do, whether it's adult to adult communication or adult to child communication. So this is a real skill to be able to stop, take a pause, take a breath, and think about what might be the feelings that are causing that behaviour. And then taking it even further back and working on the thoughts, which we're going to come to. And so I really encourage you, as a big takeaway from tonight, is to think about what is some of the behaviour telling you about how your child is feeling. So again, because it's helpful to reflect and write things down, using your workbook, capture some examples of when this is playing out for you and for your child, when your negative feelings because of negative thoughts have caused a negative behaviour or a negative action. What are some of the examples that this rings true for you as an individual, but also for your children? And again, I'd love to hear from you guys in the chat when you've had a minute to reflect. Lots of people saying behaviour and feelings. Sarah's saying, I always use distraction. I don't deal with the issue, I just avoid it. And Sarah, that is really common. You are 100% not alone in that response, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. So thank you for being so honest about that, because that is something that lots of parents do. Claire says, all behaviour is communication. 100%, you're absolutely right. And whether that behaviour is positive or negative, it's communication. So when your child is lashing out and having a big reaction, they're trying to communicate with you. And so often we interpret that behaviour as being naughty or not okay, and we focus so much on fixing the behaviour that we miss the big screaming message that sits behind that behaviour, which is how they're feeling. Behaviour at bedtime. I'm reactive to my daughter's behaviour. She's so negative and her thoughts are so low. Her behaviour is always the same and she fights any help or support. Mornings always rushed and everything's too frantic, which rubs off on them and creates negative reactions in response. Yeah. If I try to talk to my son about how he's feeling about something, he says he doesn't know and we don't get anywhere. We'll come on to that in a minute. Laura says, is there a way of telling us that something is wrong and they're not happy? Absolutely. So you guys, as expected, are coming in thick and fast with the negative responses, right? Because that is often what comes to mind more quickly, is when we see this manifesting in a negative, in a negative response. So can you see how important it is to have understood just that one simple model, just that one simple science-backed model in terms of what behavior really means in doing something differently moving forward? Because if we're not thinking about thoughts and we're not thinking about feelings and we're only thinking about behavior, we will never get past that particular issue. And in the swimming example that I used before, if we don't talk to our child and reassure them about their thoughts about swimming and their feelings about swimming that then follow, they will always be in this rut. And so understanding how to manage your thoughts as a parent, but also how to help your child manage their thoughts, is really, really important. And it can be a game changer in terms of how you parent, but also how you move through difficult times. But some of you might be sat there going, yeah, Laura, that all sounds great. And that's, you know, makes a lot of sense. But the problem is, by the time my child's having a massive meltdown or a big emotional reaction, it's too late, right? The thoughts have happened, the feelings have happened, and they're in this state of just being reactive and negative, and either they're lashing out or they're crying or they're angry or whatever it is. So how do I deal with the feelings and the thoughts then? Well, that's what we're going to talk about next. And it's exactly why, again, understanding the science and really understanding what's happening in our brain is such a game changer when it comes to supporting your children. So I'm just going to check in on the chat, and then I'm going to start talking to you about the brain. Chloe says, how does this work when your child is nonverbal and is frustrated through that, and behaviour is then hurting me because they're so frustrated? So it's the same. It's exactly the same, but with an additional layer of frustration for them, because they can't necessarily use their words to communicate. And so instead they'll use other tools, right, to communicate. So they'll use their physical self and other tools that they have available to them to communicate. But the process is the same. Thoughts, feelings, behaviours. And so however you're able to communicate with them about soothing those feelings, soothing those thoughts, is going to have the same effect. And stay tuned, because what I'm about to share will help you with that as well. So I'm going to talk to you now about how our brains work. And I'm going to keep this really simple, because we haven't got all night, as much as I'd love to stay with you guys all night. but I'm going to give you enough so that you understand this, okay? Because this is really, really important. And it's going to really help you to understand how to manage your child's big emotional outbursts differently moving forward. So within our brain, there's obviously lots and lots and lots of parts of our brain, right? There's loads of parts, and there's loads of our brain that we still don't understand. But three of the parts of the brain that we do understand really well are our hippocampus, often referred to by children in our schools program as hippopotamus, our amygdala, and our prefrontal cortex. So what do each of those parts of our brain do? Well, the hippocampus is responsible for memories. It's like a giant scrapbook of everything we learn and everything we feel, and it all gets stored in our hippocampus. Our amygdala is the part of our brain that is responsible just for keeping us safe. So all it does all day long is scan our environment and ask the question, is this safe? Is there any danger around? Is there anything that I need to be aware of? And our prefrontal cortex is the part of our brain that is responsible for logic, decision making, and making good choices. So hippocampus is memories, amygdala is keeping us safe, and prefrontal cortex is decision making. Now we're going to talk about these three parts of the brain. And what happens when we're feeling happy, safe and calm, versus what happens when we're feeling stressed, scared or worried. So what happens when we're feeling safe, calm and happy, which is hopefully how you're all feeling now and how your children will feel when they're at home with you and when they're in a safe place, is that all of these three parts of the brain are active, right? They're working together, they're communicating back and forth, and they're all working, right? They're all active. So we can recall our memories from our hippocampus. We can use our memories to answer the question that our amygdala is asking, which is this situation safe right now? And then we can make good choices on the back of that using our prefrontal cortex. So when we're feeling calm and we're feeling safe and everything is like tickety-boo, then all three parts of the brain work together really well. And of course, that's what we want, right? So this is the state we want our brain to be in order to enable us to make good choices and to be our best self. However, when we're feeling sad or stressed or worried or having some of those negative thoughts that we talked about earlier, something quite different happens in our brain. So our amygdala, if it senses danger, because we're having those thoughts and those feelings of sadness or stress or worry, our amygdala basically takes over. It goes, hang on a minute, there's danger here. The siren starts spinning. It's like a fire alarm going off in our brain and it's saying, send all resources to keep me safe. Okay. And in that process, which is a very kind of primitive response, because the amygdala hasn't evolved that much since we were primitive, so it still reacts like it would if we'd have seen been a caveman and seen a saber-toothed tiger. In that process of the amygdala becoming activated, what happens is that the hippocampus, which is all of our memories, shuts down, goes to sleep, zonkoed. And so does our prefrontal cortex, which is logical decision making. So all of a sudden, because the amygdala has been activated, we've got no recall of our memories and no ability to be logical or make rational choices. The amygdala is in control and it's in a state that probably you will have heard of, which is fight, flight or freeze, because it's thinking, I need to protect. There is danger around and I need to protect. Is this making sense? Are you guys with me? Let me know in the chat. When we're feeling happy, safe and calm, these three parts of the brain all work together. When we're feeling stressed or worried or anxious or sad, the amygdala takes over, causing the hippocampus and the amygdala to shut down. And the reason it does that, for those of you who love the science, is that all of the oxygen floods out of our brain into our arms, legs and torso, ready to fight, flight or freeze. Like I said, it's a really, really primitive response. Lots of you saying yes in the chat. Good. Now, here's the thing about our amygdala. It can either be our best friend or our worst enemy. And here's why. The amygdala responds in exactly the same way whether the danger is real or the danger is perceived. Let me say a bit more about that, and I'll use an example as an adult first. If you were walking down the street and you were about to cross the road and a car came flying around the corner super fast from nowhere, it would be your amygdala that would cause you to really quickly react and get yourself out of that situation. You would flight in that situation, right? Likewise, if you were ever so misfortunate to be involved in an attack of some kind, your amygdala would cause you to fight, flight or freeze. Okay, so when the danger is real, our amygdala is our best friend with that little angel halo on, because it's going to keep us safe. So we don't want to stop our amygdala in those situations because it's going to keep us alive, right? It's going to keep us physically safe. The problem is that when we perceive there to be danger, because we're thinking something is dangerous when it's really not, our amygdala responds in exactly the same way. Who can think of an example? Let me know in the chat. Of when your amygdala takes control, causing you to fight, flight, freeze, when it's just a perceived danger. Let me give you a couple to get your thinking caps on. Giving a public speech. For lots of people, thankfully not me, speaking publicly, presenting to people, sends their amygdala into overdrive. It activates their amygdala. It makes them think that there's danger. And so what happens is they go into fight, flight, freeze. The memories go, the logical decision goes. It's why teachers often saying to me, oh my goodness, Ofsted were coming in. I had this amazing lesson all planned out. I'd practiced it loads. But the minute the inspector walked into the classroom, I forgot everything. Yeah, you did. Because your hippocampus went to sleep. Because your amygdala took control. This is very, very real. It happens for adults. It happens for children. Some of you are sharing job interviews. That's a great example. Being part of a group, making big decisions, a sudden loud noise. Husband hates going into a small space or going on an aeroplane, going somewhere new or trying something new, hearing an alarm of some sort. So none of those things are actually a threat to your physical safety. Hearing a loud noise isn't a physical threat to your safety, but your amygdala, because of the thoughts that you have and the feelings about it, thinks that it is. And so it reacts in the same way as fight, flight, freeze. And that's exactly the same with our children. So if I take you back to that swimming pool example of the child who's petrified of swimming, what most parents would do in that situation is they would use one of two types of strategies. And I want to hear from you guys in a minute in terms of what strategies you use with your kids. But most of the parents that I coach would have historically used either a memory-based strategy or a logic-based strategy. So let's talk about this. Can you think of an example of a memory-based strategy that you might use when your child is upset? Whether it's the swimming pool or starting a new school, what's a memory-based strategy that you might have used before? Let me know in the chat what comes to mind. I'll give you an example on the swimming pool one, right? On the swimming pool example, a parent might say something like, it's gonna be fine. Last week you did great. By the time you actually got in the water, you had a really good time. That's an example of a parent using a memory-based strategy to try and soothe their child when the amygdala has become activated. So let me know what you guys think. You'll be fine, trust the teacher. They were great last week, exactly, perfect. You've been to the swimming pool before and you were fine, right? Last time it all worked out well. You enjoyed it last week. You did so well last week. Exactly, right? We rely on this memory-based strategy to try and soothe our child. Remind them of how they survived last time. Remember how you learned to ride your bike. What about a logic-based strategy? What logic-based strategies might we use when, let's stick with the swimming pool example, right? It's easy to have something specific, but let's stick with that swimming pool example and think about a logical strategy that you might use, or a logic-based strategy that you might use with your child in that situation. It's just like being in the bath and you love that. Oh, that is a great example. Just breathe. You've done it before and you had a good time. You used to enjoy this, right? These are all logic-based strategies. This makes sense because of something else. You can do this because of something that has followed before. All fantastic examples. Do either of these strategies work though? in the moment? Does the child who's told you were fine last time instantly calm down when they're screaming in the changing room, causing you to feel massive stress? No. Does a logic-based strategy of you saying to your child, just get in the water, it'll be just like in the bath, does that work? No. Are you guys figuring out why that doesn't work? Because when we're sad, stressed, or worried, and that amygdala has activated, as it has for this child in the swimming pool example, the hippocampus, which is the part of their brain that has all their memories in, isn't working in that moment. It's fast asleep. So using a memory-based strategy just doesn't work. Likewise, when the amygdala is activated because the child has perceived this to be a dangerous situation and you're trying to use a logic-based strategy, does it work? No. Why? Because the prefrontal cortex is fast asleep. So can you see why these strategies just don't work? And in fact, in many cases, will just make the situation even worse. Sally says, aha! This is often a big aha moment. Let me know in the chat if you've just had an aha moment as well, or if something's just dropped for you. And I would also love to know in the chat, so just put aha if it has. I get it. Yes, I love it. Also, let me know in the chat when this plays out for your child. So what's their swimming pool example? Maybe it is the swimming pool for them. What's the moment that your child has this big amygdala reaction that you might have only just realized is a big amygdala reaction because they feel scared? They see a situation as danger, and maybe you've been using memory and logic and it's time not to. Aha, aha, aha. Yeah. We'll come on to what we need to do in a minute. Give me time, give me time. I just want to make sure you guys are with me and that this is making sense. And I want to hear about what your examples are, because what will happen as you guys share what the examples are for you and for your children is that other people will, that will help others too, because they'll go, oh my goodness, yes, that's the same for mine as well. So let me know what they are. Going to school every morning, leaving mummy to do anything, using a different pool just today, having her face or hair washed, yeah, trying anything new, going to brownies every time I leave the house, going to parties when there's lots of children. Oh yes, that used to be a big one for one of my children as well, when they get told off. Needles and injections. Lots of you saying new situations and change. So actually, I'm just going to go back a slide. Oh, hang on. Let me see if I can do that. Yeah, there we go. Okay, so you get this, right? You can see what's happening here, and you can probably see that for many of you, and I have been here too, by the way. So this is not about feeling bad about what we've been doing, because every single parent that I've ever coached and a lot of the teachers that I train in our NHS-backed programs in schools don't know this stuff. Like, we're not taught this stuff. Nobody teaches us this when we have a baby. Nobody says, okay, so they need to have this much milk and they need to be doing this many nappies a day. Oh, and by the way, watch out for that amygdala reaction, right? Nobody teaches us this stuff. So I don't want anybody to feel guilt or shame or bad at this point, because I know from my own experience and from supporting thousands of families that that is where we can often go. Oh God, I've been so harsh on them. They weren't being naughty. It was their amygdala. It's okay. You know this now, right? So I don't want anybody to go down that mum guilt rabbit hole or dad guilt rabbit hole or grandparent guilt rabbit hole, because it is not helpful. Okay, what I want you to do is think about how you can use this knowledge moving forward, how you can use this little bit of science that I've given you tonight to change the approach. Because when you identify those moments for your child, whether it's going to school, going to a new swimming pool, doing something new, right? Whatever the things are for your kids, and they'll be different for all of us, although there are lots of commonalities. Here's what we need to do. The only way we can use logic and memory-based strategies, the only way we can help to move our child forward, to support our child in that moment, is to calm the amygdala down. We have to wake up the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex. And the only way you can do that is through particular techniques that we teach in our families program, which I won't go into the detail of right now, but techniques to calm the amygdala down, which can involve breathing, cuddling, all sorts of different soothing techniques. You will know which one is right for your child, that are going to calm that amygdala down. And then, and only then, will you be able to use memory and logic based strategies. So this is not to say you can't use memory based strategies, you can't use logic based strategies. You absolutely can, and they're brilliant strategies to use, but you just can't use them in the heat of the moment. You've got to get your child through that amygdala moment. You've got to get them calmed down through breathing or soothing techniques. And then what will happen through that process of them calming down is that the oxygen will come back up to the brain, which will help to wake up the hippocampus and wake up the prefrontal cortex. So, does that make sense? Is this resonating? Do you feel like you're starting to see how understanding just even this tiny little bit of science that I've shared with you tonight, in the scheme of all the science that I have for you, can you see how it makes such a big difference to how we would view our children's behaviour, both that thoughts, feelings and actions model and the work we've just done around understanding the brain? Fabulous. So helpful. Yes, ma'am. Love it. Okay, good. Do you also see now that you guys can do this? It's not necessarily about it being difficult or hard or complicated. It's just about arming yourselves with new knowledge. It's not about being able to do. It's about having the knowledge. It's about knowing how. Joanne says, does grounding help? What, five things that you can see, four things you can smell? Yeah, absolutely. Because again, it's a soothing technique. What you might find though in the moment is that they can't access that. If they're really struggling, if their amygdala's really taken hold, they are going to really, really struggle to access that kind of technique in the moment. So you might need to try something else, whether it's a soothing hug or some breathing exercises. You might need to try something else. Julie says, I try that, but my 10-year-old can take an hour to calm down and shouts to leave him alone. Then I would suggest that the strategies that are being used to calm him down are not the right ones for him. And I should say, I've seen lots of you talking about ADHD and autism. I am a mummy of a child with both of those neuroatypicalities. And for those of you who are wondering, does this science work as well with children who are on the spectrum or who are neurodiverse? Yes, is the answer. One of my greatest passions in life is to educate, inform and help those parents who have children who present differently but are as equally awesome as any other child, and to help them to see that these strategies work just as well there too. So yes is the answer to those questions. So what I wanted to do tonight is to help you guys to see, to believe, to trust that learning the science, learning these science-backed tools, strategies, techniques, is the only way to truly make lasting change and to really have an impact with your child's resilience and self-esteem. When you have a child who can start to learn that they can soothe themselves, right? That they can come out of these panics or these amygdala moments and move forward positively. You build their self-esteem, you build their resilience. When you have a child who used to think negative thoughts about a situation, whether that's swimming or school, and you guide them through that and you help them to switch those thoughts to be more positive, and then they feel more positive and then they have a good day. That's teaching them resilience. Because if you can give a child the gift of understanding how they work as humans and how others work as humans, you're setting them up for a life where, yes, of course, they're going to continue to face struggle and challenge. Yes, of course, they're going to face things that they're scared of, worried about, stressed about. But you're giving them tools to cope. The truth is, as much as we'd all love to, we cannot wrap our kids up in cotton wool. We cannot stop that kid that's going to be mean to them at school. We cannot stop that child who's going to make fun of them. We cannot stop the fears that they may naturally have. But what we can do, and what you can do, is we can teach them strategies and tools that are grounded in science, that allows them to move through those scenarios, which they will all face at some point, with ease and with positivity. And that is why it's so important to learn the science. And if you don't, and if we all as parents, right, continue to dabble and meander our way through and just keep trying things and hoping for the best, then we could be doing things like trying to use a memory-based strategy or a logic-based strategy when the amygdala's in full flow. It's just not going to work, right? And you see that now. You see the science of why that just won't work now. And that's why it's so important to learn this stuff, so that we're not working against ourselves, right? So that we're taking the path of least resistance rather than fighting against the way we're wired as humans. The only way to make lasting change with our kids and to become a happiness hero, whereby we understand all the science and we consistently implement it, is to learn that science in the first place. So, I want to hear from you guys. I want to hear, what are your aha moments? What's coming up for you? What are you thinking about at this point? And then shortly, we're going to go into Q&A. And what I'm going to do, just so you guys know, for those of you that were here on Thursday or watch the replay, we had some questions that had a lot of votes. So I want to hear from you in here, but I also want you to start asking your questions, because then you can vote for each other's questions and I will seek to answer those that have the most votes. So if you see a question that's very similar to yours, don't retype the question, just vote that question up. And then the ones that are at the top, we will seek to get through. But I will start with the ones from yesterday, because from Thursday, because a lot of those very much relate to the content that we've been through this evening. So let me know, how are you feeling? How are we feeling? What's on your mind? Simon says, I'm crying again because for the first time I get it and I know I can do this for the first time, Laura. Yes, you can. That makes me so happy. Tony says, I find that I need time to calm myself before I can help calm my child, but I don't always have time to do this. I love that. And that is such an important point, Tony, because what happens often for us as parents and carers is that when our child's amygdala reacts because they're stressed or worried, guess what happens to us? Our amygdala reacts, right? So if our child is stressed or worried, that often makes us feel stressed or worried, and then our amygdala can go into fight, flight, freeze, and then guess what happens? We forget all the strategies that we've learned and we forget about logic. So then we can be in a situation where it's like fight, flight, freeze against fight, flight, freeze, and it doesn't end well. So that's a really, really important point in terms of learning as parents. And this is one of the things we spend a lot of time on inside the Families Programme, learning as parents how to manage our own amygdala. Because you're absolutely right. When our children are reacting in that fight, flight, freeze mode, we can very often get to that place as well. I'm really pleased that you raised that. Like, I can actually pull this parenting thing off. I can finally breathe knowing my kiddos will become great adults. Yes, love that. Love that. A dad says, I've begun to realise that my child doesn't react to logic or memory-based techniques, but I'm often too tired to be comforting and just be caring. Yeah, I get that. This all makes sense now. I'm so happy to have some hope in dealing with the meltdowns now. Yes. Yep. Amazing. Okay, cool. So, what you might now be thinking is, but how the heck am I supposed to learn all of this science? Because I have just shared a teeny tiny bit of it with you tonight. Or, you know, Laura, this is all great and, you know, it's amazing, but I have got other stuff to do in my life, right? I've got to cook, I've got to clean, I've potentially got to work, I'm juggling, there's so much else I have to do. How am I going to fit it in? And how the heck am I supposed to know which bits of science are important versus which bits aren't important? Like, how am I supposed to decipher what matters and what doesn't? And I get it, because that's exactly where I was in my journey when I first started researching this space. And it's exactly why I created My Happy Mind, because I wanted to give schools, families, and nurseries a total system that very, very succinctly and easily, and quite frankly, quickly, would teach you the science that matters. And that is what we do in our My Happy Mind system. And so in our next session in phase three, I'm going to be taking you through that system. And I'm going to be showing you the five key areas of science that you will need to have understood, learned, and then implemented in order to become that happiness hero, right? In order to have all of the tools in your toolkit that you need to build your child's resilience and self-esteem. Because I will tell you, there is a lot out there and it is overwhelming, but I've done that bit for you. And the reason that our programs in schools are so popular and the reason the NHS pay for them is because they work. And the reason they work is because we've got it down to a fine art in terms of the types of strategies that need to be in place. And that's exactly what we're going to be going through in Thursday's session. So by the end of Thursday, you will be holding in your hand, either in your workbook or on something you've scribbled down, a completed version of the My Happy Mind system with those five key areas. I am cutting through all the work for you and going to give you exactly what you need to have in place, because it is overwhelming and there is a lot out there. So, my friends, I'm going to be honest, I'm pretty impressed with myself. I wanted to make it an hour and it's like 1 hour and 4 minutes, which is pretty good. I'm going to give myself that. So what we're going to do now is we are going to dive into questions and reflections. So as I mentioned a minute ago, please do use the ask a question function on your on the bottom of your screens. If you're watching this in Facebook, you won't have that ability. You will have to come over to the Kajabi Crowdcast page, which the team will link you to. They probably already have done. I know they're busy working away. But if you want to ask a question and you're on Facebook, I won't see it right now because I'm not on Facebook right now. I'm on Crowdcast. If you're with me on the live page and you've been chatting and everything, then please do use the questions function at the bottom, because I will look for the ones that have the most votes and that's where I will begin. But before I do so, just to give you guys some time to type in your questions and vote for questions, I am going to go through the three that had the most votes from Thursday last week. Okay, so these were the three questions that, as you can see, had lots of votes from other people. So I want to tackle these ones head on. And then after that, I will have a look at the new ones that have come in for this evening. So hopefully that works for you guys. I'm just going to have a little sip of my water because I'm getting a bit froggy with my voice. Oh, Sally, thank you. I'm halfway through the book. It's amazing. That's kind. I'm pleased you're enjoying it. Okay, so questions from phase one. So the one at the top, in fact, the top two are really linked to the content that we've been doing tonight. So hopefully you've already got some more clarity on this, but let's go through them anyway. So the first one was, my seven-year-old has difficulty regulating her emotions and her temper will go from 1 to 100 in seconds, looking for techniques to help. So the most important thing that I can share with you to answer this is understanding that amygdala response. What you're describing here is a child whose amygdala has activated. So the reason it feels like it's gone from 1 to 100 is because it has. Because her amygdala has sensed danger, right? And it's gone danger alert, and it's gone into fight, flight, freeze. So you will either be experiencing a fight emotion, a flight emotion, or a freeze emotion. And it's different for every child. And it can be different responses for different situations for the same child. So for example, it could be that your daughter fights when she senses danger in at home. So if you ask her to turn the TV off and do her homework, for example, she might sense that as danger. She might fight you. But in school, if she's asked to stand up and read a poem, she might freeze, right? She might just freeze and not speak. So children can have different responses in different situations. But what's happening there is her amygdala is taking over. Her amygdala is going, woo, 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 woo. There is danger and we need to do something about it. So we're going to fight, flight, freeze to protect you. So in terms of techniques, what I would love for you to do is reflect on what we've talked about tonight. So reflect first on the first model. What might be the thoughts and the feelings that are leading to that response, right? What might be going on for her up here and with how her emotions are in terms of what leads her to that point. So is it to do with situations she's scared of? Is she angry about a situation for some reason? Be a bit of a scientist, be a bit of an investigator, take a step back. I often say this to families in our families program when I'm coaching them. Sometimes we have to take a step back and be the observer, right? And just watch what's going on to try and understand where that reaction might be coming from. And then the second piece that I'd love you to play around with and give a go with is thinking about that amygdala response. So how can you soothe her? How can you calm her down when she's in those moments rather than jumping straight into strategies like logical memory or other strategies you might have used? So really focus on letting her be, letting her have that emotional reaction, remembering that emotional reactions are communication. She's trying to tell you something, whether that's anger or fear or whatever it might be. Finding a way to soothe that's going to work for her. Okay, and I noticed a question before, what are the soothing techniques? I couldn't possibly cover that tonight. That's something that we go into detail with in our families program, because it does really depend on the child. So there's breathing techniques, there's other techniques, there's all sorts of things that are out there, and you guys can Google that as well after this session, but I'm not going to spend loads of time on that now because I want to get to other questions. But the point is, every child responds differently to how they want to be soothed. For some kids, they want to sit in a room on their own and rock, and that's okay. For other kids, they want to do some breathing exercises. For other kids, they just want you to hug them, right? It's different for every child, and it can be different for every situation. So that's a bit of trial and error in terms of establishing what the right technique is. But beyond all of that, and almost more importantly than all of that, before you even get to the soothing stage, it's understanding that you need to, right? That you need to get her calm first before you start moving forward. And really understand what those emotions are. Next question, which had 69 votes. I have a child that loses his temper very easily and doesn't remember why or what happened to lead up to it. Who wants to let me know in the chat which part of the brain is responsible for him not remembering why? Can you remember from your little science lesson before which part of the brain is responsible for him not remembering why? Let me know in the chat. Giving you a second. Yes, Mabel, Sally, fastest finger first. Oh yes, the hippo. I love it. The hippo, the hippocampus. So what you're describing right here, which you probably know now, is that the amygdala's taken over, hippocampus is fast asleep, zonkoed on the sofa, so of course he can't remember why or what happened in the lead up to it. The minute that amygdala is triggered, those parts of the brain shut down so quickly that he would not be able to necessarily remember. But here's what's interesting. If you're trying to ask him what happened, what was the lead up to it, any time close to when that event happened, he won't remember. Give it some time, allow him to fully calm down, right? Allow him to fully self-soothe. And then when the hippocampus wakes up again, he may start to remember, right? He may start to be able to think about what was going on in that moment before his amygdala got triggered. But if we're asking our kids in the moment, if we're asking our kids when that amygdala is still in control, you know, what was going on, or what were you thinking, or why didn't you do that, or why didn't you try this, they just can't access those parts of their brain. So they won't remember. In the same way, it's like when you say to a child who, you know, lots of our families have had challenges with their child's behaviour where they get very angry or very cross and they lash out, right? Maybe they hit a sibling or they chuck something across the room, or, you know, they have some kind of violent reaction, whether that's verbal or physical. And they'll say to their child, you know that you're not allowed to do that. You've been told you're not allowed to lay hands on your sister, or you've been told not to touch the pillows on the sofa, let alone not to chuck them across the room, right? They're trying to use logic. They're assuming that in that fit of rage, when their amygdala was in control, they could have accessed logic. They could have accessed their prefrontal cortex, which of course they couldn't. Which is why the child will say to you afterwards, I know I shouldn't have done that, mummy. I'm so sorry. Or daddy, I know it was wrong to use those words. I just couldn't help it. Because their amygdala was in control, not their prefrontal cortex and not the hippocampus. So you can see how this stuff all ties together, right? How it all knits together and how it all links. And the final and most popular question of all was, I have a child that seeks perfection and hates getting things wrong or losing and really gets upset when things don't go their way. This is really far from my mindset, so any tips on how to deal with it would be great. Well, we are going to be going into this in detail in Thursday's session, because one of the things we'll do as we work through the system is I'm going to be sharing with you in one of those five key areas all about what actually builds self-esteem. What you're describing here in a child that seeks perfection is a child that views their competence or their ability to do stuff, right, to achieve stuff, whether that's a maths test or a piece of art or whatever. They are defining themselves based on that. So they believe that they need to have a good level of competence, they need to be good at stuff in order to be valid, right, to get validated. And there's all sorts of things we can help you with to do that differently moving forward. So hold that thought for next week, because that's not next week, next session on Thursday, 2 days, because we're going to be talking about that as a whole segment in the next session. And I've got some real juicy stuff for you on that. Okay, so let's have a little look at the questions and see what's coming up. Okay, let's have a little look, see at what we've got. Oh, we've got lots of questions. Okay. Can you give, so I'm going to start at the top, basically, and work my way down. So thank you, by the way, to everybody for using the voting function, because it makes this really much easier for me to be able to answer the most pressing ones. So can you give some examples of other soothing techniques, as my child also takes a long time to calm down and doesn't want to be hugged while having a meltdown? So yes, I can, but I will preface this by saying one of the things that's really important to do, which we do with families in the families program, is to teach your child some of this science too. Because it's one thing trying to introduce a strategy like a soothing technique to a child who's had some understanding of how their brain works, which we teach in a very child-friendly way. And it's another thing just to introduce a technique. So I'm not obviously going to be teaching you how we teach kids in the program, because that's something that we do in the program. But I'm happy to offer some other things for you to play around with in terms of soothing techniques. But I just wanted to give you that context, because it's not necessarily just a case of trying a different technique. It might be that your child needs a better understanding of what's going on in their brain first, right, in order to adopt those techniques. But that said, examples are hugs, breathing techniques, helping them to find a quiet, safe space away from others, stroking their back, singing to them, all sorts of things, right? And one of the things that might be useful for you guys to think about with this is, what have you noticed works, right? With your child, when they're upset or they're stressed or they're angry, what have you seen that works? Because there isn't a one size fits all, which is why I'm kind of prefacing it with, often the game changer for families is when they teach their kids the science, which is, as I say, something that we've not got time to do now. And it's something that I teach inside our families program, but it could be that actually what your child needs is some more support in better understanding their own emotions first. And then you can try some different techniques. So hopefully that answers the question. How do you get to the thoughts of a child who won't share how they feel? Well, that is a great question, which I think was asked by Lindsay and has had a lot of people vote for it. And the truth is with this, is that it takes some time, right? So if a child is so stressed or so worried or so sad or so closed that they won't share their feelings, there's some work to do around that. Most of the time when a child is that closed and they won't share their feelings or their emotions, or they can't share their feelings or emotions, and I'd like to make that distinction because it may be that we're assuming that they won't, but it's probably more likely that they can't, right? They don't necessarily have the tools. And again, this is something I spend a lot of time on in our families program, is helping children to develop the tools to be able to communicate. I think often as parents, we make this assumption that kids should know how to do that. And often they don't, and that's okay, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but I know loads of adults that don't know how to communicate their emotions, let alone kids. So it's not their fault if they don't know how to communicate them. So there's lots of things that we do in the families program to support kids in learning how to express their emotions. So just remember that. It might not be that they won't, it could be that they can't. So that's the first thing to say on that. And then the second thing that, you know, we spend a lot of time doing with families that we work with is really looking at what's the root cause, right? So what's the root cause of them not feeling able to? So not being able to, as opposed to refusing to, which is more often than not the case. What's behind that, right? What's at the root of that? And more often than not, it is about self-esteem. It's about how they feel about themselves. And when kids and adults have low self-esteem, they are much less likely to share how they feel. And so our approach at My Happy Mind, as you're probably starting to see and learn from the way that I've been teaching you guys and the way that I've kind of led this whole experience, is that we lean into positive strategies. We don't lean into deficit-based approaches. We lean into positive strategies. So what do I mean by that? And I'll go into this in more detail on Thursday in terms of self-esteem specifically, because we'll be talking about that a lot on Thursday. But one approach might be, an approach that lots of parents might take, would be to try and work on getting your child to share their feelings, right? So if you have this sense, this feeling, this acknowledgement that they're not sharing their feelings, one may try to get them to share their feelings. I would say that is leaning into more of a deficit-based approach, because it's focusing on the problem of, why aren't you sharing your feelings? What we would do in that situation with a family that was struggling with that is that we would be focusing on supporting the child to build their self-esteem. Because in the process of building their self-esteem, which is a positive process, right? It's a solution-focused process. What will come with is them feeling more able to share their feelings. So rather than leaning into the problem, we lean into the solution, which I hope makes sense. But yes, lots more on that in terms of how to build self-esteem in children in Thursday's session. But that's essentially where I would be coaching any family that we work with to go if they're struggling to get their children to share how they're feeling. So hopefully that helps. We've spoken about calming techniques already. Okay, I read somewhere that you shape a child's personality up to age 7. Is this true? Oh yeah, that old quote. What is it? give me a boy at 7 and I'll show you the man. Is it? Is that it? Well, someone said 8 the other day, so maybe that's the answer to the question. The truth is that, yes, there are the formative years for kids, right? And a lot of their kind of character and their personalities get developed at a very young age. But it's not a case that once they get to 7, your work here is done and you'll never be able to support them or change them again. I mean, heck, there are adults doing self-development work, right? There are adults who's have these huge transformations, these huge personal development transformations that become more confident, that gain self-esteem. So if adults can change, of course kids can change. So that's not true. There might be different strategies that we use. It might be a different approach. So often when I'm coaching a family who's got a six-year-old who's struggling with self-esteem, the strategies might look a bit different to the child who's 11, right? But the science is the same. And that's why you hear me harping on about the science the whole time, because the science is the same in terms of how you build self-esteem, which we'll talk about on Thursday. But the strategy and the how you bring that to life and how you talk to that child may be different because they're different, right? A six-year-old and an 11-year-old are going to need a different set of strategies. So no is the answer to that question. So whatever age your child is, whatever age you are, if any of this has resonated for you and you're thinking, oh my gosh, my amygdala kicks off, how am I ever going to change that? I'm 30 or 40 or 50 or however old we all are, right? You can change that response too. I have worked with thousands of families who have been able to do that. And so if they can do it, you can do it too. And by the way, I used to too. My amygdala used to go crazy when my child was distressed. I just didn't realize that's what was happening. I can remember once being in the school playground and them being really upset and clearly in an amygdala fight, flight, freeze moment. And this mother making a comment and then me going into an amygdala fight, flight, freeze moment. And it was a particularly prickly conversation, let's just say that. And at the time, I didn't realise it. At the time, I didn't realise I was in a fight, flight, freeze. But because my child was distressed, I became distressed. And then I was in fight, flight, freeze, and the whole thing just got a bit crazy. So yeah, if you know that mum in the playground, that could have been me a few years ago. And also just remember that it could just be that she's having an amygdala moment, right? She's having a struggle in that moment and that's really, really tough for her. So yeah, you can absolutely do this work at any age and stage. Does it get trickier the older they get? In some cases, yes, but not always. But it's doable. It's absolutely doable. Okay. How can I help a child that can very quickly get angry and physical? So Holly, I think, asked this question originally. I hope that's the case, by the way. I'm reading your name out because that's the name I see. So I'm assuming that's the originator of the question. But if it's not, I apologise. How can I help a child that can get very quickly and get very angry and very physical? So again, this is the amygdala taking control. When you see that really fast reaction, that really quick change from one emotional state to another, it's likely to be the amygdala. So that's quite a good little tip as well to look out for. So I think a lot of the advice and stuff I've shared already hopefully will help with that. But again, it's about bringing that amygdala down, waking up those other parts of the brain, finding a technique that works for them. To get them to calm down before trying anything else, right? So, you know, the child who's in that kind of amygdala moment is not going to calm down if you tell them to calm down. In fact, I have this quote that I use in one of my training sessions. I think it's inside the Families Program where I say, never in the history of a child calming down did saying to a child, calm down, ever make them calm down. It's this idea that it just doesn't work. Like if you say to somebody who's really tearful, even if it's a friend, don't cry, it doesn't stop them crying. But we say these things, don't we? We have these things that we say because they've been said to us, and it's just this pattern of repeated behaviour that just doesn't work. So yeah, starting with the science-led techniques that you've learned tonight is definitely the way forward there. What about behaviours that are as a result of not getting their own way? Oh, this is a good question. So basically, this is a bit of a a situation again where you have to be a bit of a scientist, right? And you have to learn to decipher between amygdala moments and not getting my own way moments. However, there are some blurred lines. So this is a classic example of the type of thing that I would coach a family through or a parent through in the My Happy Mindful Families program, where they would come and say, Laura, they're doing this. I think they're just being, if I'm honest, I think they're just being a bit of a brat, Laura. What do I do? We would work through that and unpick that together, because this is going to be so different for every child. And actually, sometimes what we think is just them not getting their own way behavior is actually an amygdala moment. So let me give you an example of that. If let's say you've got a five-year-old and a newborn baby, or an eight-year-old, a five-year-old and a newborn baby, okay? And the five-year-old says to you, Mummy, I want a snack. And you say, you can have a snack after I finish feeding the baby. And they kick off. They have this big reaction and you think, oh, they're just not getting their own way. They just want their snack right now, so they're kicking off. It would be easy to assume that that's why they're having that reaction, right? That they're just not getting their own way, so they're just kicking off. What if I told you that that could actually be an amygdala moment? Because actually what they're sensing is, because of this new baby, my needs aren't being met anymore. That could be how they're interpreting that comment. So what would I advise in that situation? What would I coach that parent through? Well, I'd be saying things like, have you done the work to build up their sense of security, their sense of belonging, their sense of love since the new baby arrived? And the mum might say, oh no, I've not, because I'm knackered, I've not been sleeping, obviously all the focus has been on the baby. Then I say, okay, give that a go. Lean into giving them a bit more attention. And rather than saying, I'll get you a snack when I fed the baby, say, can you see that right now mummy needs to feed the baby? Because the baby's hungry and the baby can't wait, but because you're such a big boy, you can wait and mummy's gonna get it in just a minute. And all of a sudden, they don't have a meltdown anymore. So it wasn't that they weren't getting their own way, it was that they were interpreting and putting a meaning on that statement, which was, my needs aren't being met. And so I'm not trying to be evasive in answering your question, I'm just explaining that sometimes things aren't as they seem. And so the power of having a community and being coached is that we can really dig into what's going on in your specific situation and help you with that. So hopefully that gives you some ideas. Again, be a scientist, like look behind the curtain and see what you can discover. Maybe challenge your own assumptions as well in terms of what you might be seeing. I'm going to come back to the questions in a minute, but just to remind you, because I know loads of you have had aha moments, do enter the competition, because I think Liv on our team, who's running the competition for me, said we had about 80 entrants before tonight. So like, someone's got to win this stuff. Someone's going to win free access to the families program that I keep harping on about. Someone's going to win a brand new iPad. We're even going to let you pick the color when we've found the winner. So if you're having aha moments, email them in, take a picture of your workbook, email them in, post them in the Facebook group, because someone's got to win it. And you know what they say, you've got to be in it to win it. So I'm just going to come back to the questions and see if there's anything else coming through. Can you share the research references your advice is based on? Oh my goodness, I absolutely can, but not right now, because it's literally years of research. What I can tell you is that everything that we teach is based in neuroscience and positive psychology. So you are welcome to Google away, but I couldn't possibly get into that now. It would take me forever. There is a lot of research and study that has gone into building the My Happy Mind program and system. So I would literally be here all night if I was to take you through that in detail. But yeah, positive psychology and neuroscience are two of the big threads of things that we talk through. Yes, we can help children and adults that are triggered by traumatic events. Absolutely. Can we get a copy of the slides? I think that's already been answered. Thank you. Thank you, Nat. So many young people in schools are suffering with anxiety. How can we get the government to listen and change the way schools teach and embed more nature-based learning into our children's lives? Oh, I hear you. Believe me, I'm trying. So we're in hundreds of schools now with My Happy Mind and growing all of the time. And I totally agree with you. You know, we've managed to get the NHS to fund it, which we're really thrilled with. But I think it's awareness, isn't it? It's awareness and it's spreading the word and it's moving away from, as I was saying before, focusing solely on a deficit-based approach. So dealing with anxiety, depression, self-harm, etc., and focusing on a preventative or positive approach, which is what My Happy Mind is all about. So the reason that schools love us, the reason that parents love our programs is that, again, we lean into that, you know, not how do I fix a broken human, but how do I work with a human to help them to be happy, right? What is it that humans need in order to be happy? And we start there. So rather than starting with a deficit approach and reacting to a problem, we start with a positive approach and we prevent the problem. And what happens inevitably is that when you are using positive strategies, you do end up fixing a lot of the problems too. In fact, in our schools programme, for those of you that are in the UK, you'll have heard about the CAMHS service, Children and Adult Mental Health Services. And after just 1 year of having our schools programme in place, schools see a reduction of approximately 40% of CAMHS referrals. So 40% less children getting referred into that kind of specialist mental health support because of what they've learned within My Happy Mind. So whilst we're preventative and we're positive and we're proactive, actually giving children those skills and those tools does reduce their need for more specialist care down the line. So listen, I am with you. I could talk to you about my views on that all night, but I'm sure that you're tired. I am definitely getting to the stage where my voice is getting croaky. So I am gonna start wrapping things up. I know there's some of the questions. What I'm gonna get asked the team to do, just because I'm conscious of everyone's time, is to capture the questions. We will capture them and I will answer some of them in the Facebook group tomorrow. So try and check into that and have a look in the group for answers to your questions if I didn't get to them. But I hope that you have enjoyed this session. I hope you're starting to see how learning just a tiniest little bit of the science can totally transform the way that you think about these issues, that you think about supporting your child's emotion, and that you think about this whole space, right, of self-esteem, resilience and happiness. And I cannot wait in Thursday's session to talk you through the 5 key areas that are really, really critically important to have in place in order to support your child's resilience, mental health and happiness. So thank you so much. It's been wonderful to hang out with you. I will see you all really soon and hope to see you on Thursday. And if you're catching the replay, wherever you're catching it, make sure you let us know what you think. Share your questions. Share